Our collective nightmare, the Louvre was robbed in broad daylight. Napoleonic era artifacts, what they call France's crown jewels, were bundled out of a world-class museum while the world watched its lunch. They called it the heist of the century, which is both advertising and a warning label. The president called it an attack on a heritage we cherish and promised justice. Justice was promised with the same calm routine as weather forecasts and holiday greetings. Investigators rounded up 8 people. None of the treasures have been found. The treasures may be gone forever. The institutional script is intact. Outrage, detention, timelines. Results pending. They put together a timeline of the audacious burglary. The timeline exists so we can feel organized about chaos. It tells us when things happened and lets us pretend that knowing the time makes the theft less final. It will be read on loop, citations and captions, until someone needs a new scandal. 8 detained, 0 recovered. That arithmetic is the ledger of our moment. Arrests are neat and look effective on camera. Artifacts which are mute and old are loose in a market that eats meaning for profit. The state vows to find them. The market vows nothing. Promises are paperwork. Objects are gone. There is a certain poetry in stealing the things meant to prove continuity. You take the crowns and what you get is a loud, empty echo where prestige used to be. Politicians say this hurts a nation's soul. They speak as if souls can be photographed and archived. The real hurt is quieter. A small, everyday erosion of the idea that public things are safe, that culture is more than an asset class, that history is not for sale. We are told this is an attack on heritage. We are not told where heritage goes. When it is taken, it might be in a warehouse, it might be unmade into parts, it might already be cataloged in a private collection that buys the future and calls it investment. The most likely outcome is worse. Nothing recovered. A blot on a ledger. A line in a timeline. Then an anniversary piece that remembers how incompetent we were. This is a sad, precise theft that reveals something clumsy and permanent about us. We will get statements, we will get inquiries, we will get a timeline. The phrase heist of the century will age well on press releases. The artifacts will be gone, or they will be turned into profit, or they will be forgotten. We will continue to run museums as if custody equals care. The story reads like a confirmation. Our public things are negotiable. Our vows are ceremonial, and the theater of outrage keeps breathing while the goods vanish. The Louvre still stands. The glass still glints. The chandeliers keep doing their work. History's inventory does not.
This year, Times Square upgraded its annual fake meteor ritual to the Constellation Ball, 12.5 feet across, just over 12,000 pounds, and literally encrusted with 5,280 Waterford crystals. Because nothing says modernity like a disco planet you can't afford to assemble in your living room, the origin story is beautiful. It started in 1907 as a practical device for sailors to set their clocks. Today, it's a corporate crafted symbol of interconnectedness, wholeness, and the cyclical nature of tradition, which is the kind of mission statement you get when your marketing team finally gets tired of asking, "What if light bulbs were expensive?" They redesigned the crystals from triangles to circles, 3 sizes, which means that at midnight we no longer debate politics, policy, or the climate. We argue about the geometry of our catharsis. Triangles were out. Circles are humane. That's evolution by focus group. The ball is lowered by an actual pulley system run by people who remember when it was hand-lowered and felt, as Thomas Starr put it, a minute outside of time. A minute during which you can change your life. Because apparently deciding to be less terrible fits neatly into 60 seconds, while a 12,000-pound ornament inches toward a pole. Millions will watch at home, millions will stand in the cold, and hundreds of brand managers will breathe a sigh of relief that the year can begin with something shiny and enormous. We took a 19th-century navigational tool, used to save lives, and turned it into a giant, government-approved New Year's Eve mood ring. So at midnight we gather, count down, watch a heavy, jewel-studded ball lower itself, and kiss someone because tradition tells us to. And then, immediately afterward, we spend the next 12 months pretending that bigger and shinier solved anything at all.
60 people across 22 states got sick after eating raw oysters, the CDC warned on December 23rd. The oysters were likely carrying salmonella, which is exactly as glamorous as it sounds. Invisible bacteria that turn a night of shellfish and small talk into diarrhea, fever, and a desperate search for electrolytes. Oysters are perfection machines for pathogens. They filter huge volumes of water and hoard whatever spills in, sewage, runoff, whatever the ocean is currently recycling. Testing and monitoring lower the odds but cannot erase them. In other words, regulations can nudge risk, not eliminate it. People will keep ordering mignonette and blaming fate. Salmonella usually makes itself known within hours to a few days. Most healthy adults recover in under a week, with fluids and rest. Vulnerable people, older adults, infants, pregnant people, and anyone immunocompromised can end up with infections that spread beyond the gut and require hospitalization. That's the part where social eating meets actual danger. Cooking kills the bacteria. Steam oysters in the shell 4 to 9 minutes, cook shucked oysters for at least 3 minutes, or heat seafood to 145 degrees Fahrenheit for 15 seconds. Hot sauce, lime juice, confidence, or peer pressure do not. If oysters sit out more than 2 hours, 1 hour in heat, toss them. Cross-contamination matters. Wash hands. Label things. Do the boring, effective things. And yet, during holiday get-togethers, people will pick raw oysters like it's safe rebellion. Public health will issue advisories. Media will urge caution. The raw bar will keep spinning. This outbreak is small, contained, and predictable. An ordinary reminder that our food system fences risk rather than banishes it. The next surprise will be louder, and we'll call it unprecedented anyway.
This monologue is drawn from the article 2026 Celestial Events, published by CNN's Wonder Theory. We have another year's worth of sky shows scheduled for us, as if the universe sent a calendar invite and forgot to attach a subject line. Bright full moons, supermoons that puff up a little closer like a guest who overstays, meteor showers that streak and dissolve, eclipses that stage brief, dramatic disappearances. 2026 promises plenty of reasons to look up so we can feel small and important at once. 13 full moons this year. 13. Our tidy Gregorian months clash with the moon's 29-day rhythm so often that we end up with an extra one in May. A blue moon, the phrase we all learned as a quaint reminder that rarity is negotiable. We name these things, snow moon, worm moon, buck moon, cold moon. Naming is our defense against being anonymous dust, a way to schedule wonder so. It fits into work shifts and babysitters. There will be 3 supermoons, January, November, December, one of which will be closer than usual, 221,667 miles away. That sounds astronomically intimate until you remember those miles are still many times farther than your neighbor's emotional distance. The moon grows slightly fuller, and we act like the universe adjusted its brightness for our Instagram feeds. Meteor showers, those brief fireworks from comets that have been ignoring us for millennia, get billed as nature's best light show. The quadrantids will fight visibility with a supermoon early in the year. The Perseids and Geminids are predicted to be the stars of the season. We plan blankets and late nights for events that last minutes per meteor and yet somehow become the measuring sticks of our memories. We rate our lives by the frequency of beautiful, ephemeral things. 2. Solar eclipses and 2 lunar eclipses make the program. One annular eclipse will crown Antarctica with a ring of fire, an exclusive show for the coldest, emptiest auditorium on the planet, while a total eclipse will rim across Greenland, Iceland, Spain, Russia, and part of Portugal. The rest of us get a partial view, or we log on and watch someone else's shadow pass. NASA and astronomers remind us to wear eclipse glasses, as if the universe would be cruel without eyewear instructions. Planets will stage polite parades, Venus flirting with Jupiter, Mercury rising like a shy guest, Uranus and Neptune peeking in from the back row with binoculars. On October 6, the moon will appear to hide Jupiter for an hour in parts of North America. An old celestial trick. Proximity without collision, illusion without consequence. We love optical tricks because they reassure us that complexity can be explained by geometry. All this is absurd and comforting. The cosmos offers spectacle on an indifferent schedule. We line up, binoculars in hand, writing itineraries for moments the universe doesn't owe us. We seek meaning in arcs of dust and reflected light, and in return we get math, timing, and the occasional blood moon that makes for great photography and better metaphors. Maybe the point is not to find grand answers beneath these events, but to stand, metaphorically, outside our routines long enough to watch something that doesn't care about our deadlines. The stars will keep their appointments whether we're ready or not, and for a few hours we will steal a small, shared awe from an uncaring sky. That's enough theater for most of us, cheap, cosmic, and tragically beautiful.
The capitalist's fever dream, 40,000 oysters, $400,000 worth of lobster meat, and a cache of crab vanished across New England in a matter of weeks. Small aquaculture cages emptied in Casco Bay, a shipment walked away from a logistics warehouse in Taunton, and a fraudulent trucking operation intercepted product bound for Costco stores in the Midwest. The oysters came from 14 cages, full grown and ready to sell, a blow measured in ruined livelihoods more than ledger entries. The crab disappeared after leaving a major cold storage facility. The lobster was lifted by a fraud that copied the rituals of commerce. A spoofed email, a truck rebranded on the side, a falsified driver credential. The crime resembled a business transaction because the business had already outsourced trust to paperwork and logos. This is not a glitch. It is an intensification. Freight theft has been gnawing at supply chains for years and now runs like a tax on the system, daily, multiple times a day, by industry accounts. The methods have bifurcated into impersonation, where criminals imitate carriers and paperwork, and strategic digital theft, where phishing and compromised systems siphon payments without ever touching a crate. Perishability accelerates the joke. Lobster with a short shelf life likely slithered into restaurant kitchens hours after the switch. The market's velocity makes theft itself a distribution strategy. Someone turned live seat to cash, then into dinner, and the only victims with standing to cry are the small operators whose margins were already microscopic. Observe the logic. When every asset is a commodity, every node in the chain is a target. Corporations publish master schedules and tracking IDs. Criminals publish counterfeit versions. Regulation and enforcement lag. Behind a marketplace that prizes speed over security, transparency over accountability, losses amortized into higher prices, insurance premiums, and thinner paychecks. The result is predictable and obscene. Ordinary consumers pay more to mask the structural theft that capitalism enables. The theater of legitimacy, branded trucks, certified IDs, corporate emails, now functions as a how-to manual for theft. The same efficiency that lets food move across states also manufactures plausible deniability. Small fishermen are left to tally gutted cages while the broader system neutralizes the crime by labeling it an operational cost and folding it into consumer prices. What the headlines call a heist looks like a symptom. Supply chains turned brittle by outsourcing, surveillance, and the fetishization of low margins. The market's hunger eats the margins of honesty until crime is simply another line item on a balance sheet. The fever dream of infinite profit finishes by monetizing even the theft of living things, and the bill is mailed to everyone who still expects commerce to operate on anything other than extraction.